The NBA draft is rapidly approaching, and this year we won't have fans booing in the stands or shouting out picks, but one thing is going to be the same. There's going to be a lot of movement leading up to the draft, so what better time to bring in my colleague Brian Kalbrowski of HoopsHype and USA Today to join me on the pod and discuss where some of the top draft picks could land and who are maybe some sleepers in the draft that the casual fan may not know about. And I'll take a look at some teams that could make some trades as well, coming up next. Brian, appreciate you hopping on the pod with me, brother. I hope you and your family are doing well during the pandemic. How you holding up?
I'm doing well, man. It's been a really crazy time, and I've really definitely tried my best to fully dive into draft coverage. I think so far in this class, I've had interviews with over 30 prospects, top 100 prospects, and you know, I'm really getting to know this class and getting to know the kind of people they are. And it's been, you know, really, really fascinating and a really insightful time for me as well, because I think, you know, getting to know these people goes a really long way in predicting how they're going to do in the NBA, I think. You know, you can kind of tell sometimes, you know, just in one conversation how special somebody is and, you know, whether or not they have the mentality to succeed in the NBA.
That's a great point. A lot of these prospects have talent, but do they have the mental fortitude to succeed and the discipline and their work ethic? And you can obviously find Brian's work on the Rookie Wire and Hoops Hype as well. You touched on some of those guys that you've written about. Certainly, probably the most talked about guy in this draft, if not the most polarizing guy, in my opinion, is LaMelo Ball, brother of Lonzo, son of LeVar. He's been a hyped young man for a long time, and he could potentially be the top pick. I know you recently in your mock draft had him as the number one guy on your board going to Minnesota currently. What are your thoughts on LaMelo Ball heading into this 2020 draft?
Yeah, I think LaMelo is a really fascinating case study. Because, you know, I think in the future, guys like LaMelo who didn't go the NCAA route will probably have gone the G League route. So this is probably going to be the last time we see somebody like LaMelo without the body of work, potentially still being a number one pick without going the G League route. And I think that, you know, he really helped change a lot of, you know, the path to what the G League Elite team is going to be next year, G League Ignite, you know, with Jonathan Kuminga and those folks, you know, making a name for themselves going that route instead. And I think LaMelo is a really tough prospect to evaluate. The number one thing for me that puts him in the best spot in this draft and the reason why I have him going to Minnesota right now is just his size and his playmaking ability combined. That gives you a potential that I think is really hard to turn down. I think that, you know, you could look at guys like Anthony Edwards and you could say, oh, he's an explosive playmaker, potential 3-and-D guy, stuff like that. But, you know, I think those things, there's a lot of guys who can do that. LaMelo has the specialness factor because there's very few guys at 6'8" who have the playmaking ability that he offers. And I think in that sense, his court vision alone is a way that he can be able to find his way into the starting lineup of teams for years to come. I think Minnesota would be a really interesting fit for him because you pair his 6'8" height with D'Angelo Russell, who's, you know, 6'5" plus as well, and you've got a jumbo sized backcourt. So, you know, you see a lot of backcourts right now in the NBA where there's two ball dominant players. You know, you've seen it with Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. You see that with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. Minnesota have their own version of that here, except both these guys are like at least 5 to 6 inches taller than their counterparts that I mentioned before, you know, in Portland and Toronto. So I think that LaMelo would give a really interesting element to Minnesota's offense. It would kind of tie all of it together in a way that kind of just help facilitate D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns. And I think the other thing that's worth noting is, you know, I think D'Angelo Russell plays better off the ball. I think that he's a fantastic shooter, a really great scorer. But I think sometimes his decision making leaves some to be desired. And I think LaMelo could offer, you know, that on ball playmaking that could help facilitate in ways that D'Angelo Russell cannot. So I think that that's the reason why I have him at number one is, you know, there's a uniqueness that comes with his height and his playmaking that, you know, we don't see very often. You know, it comes down to guys like Ben Simmons and Cade Cunningham, who's coming out next year, and guys like that. And that's a very rare company to be in.
Yeah, when I look at LaMelo, I touched on it a little earlier, but a polarizing guy when it comes to certain executives and their evaluations. He's a guy that having that overseas experience and being a pro on one hand helps him. You know, we've seen it in the past where guys go overseas like a Brandon Jennings many years ago, and it is a different and unique path. For LaMelo, I think it's about harnessing, at least when I talk to executives, harnessing those shot mechanics, decision making. And you touched on D'Angelo Russell. We saw in Brooklyn when D'Angelo would play with Spencer Dinwiddie off the ball as a catch and shoot guy, beyond the arc coming off screens. He was effective in that regard. So if Minnesota went that route, offensively, I could see that as a fit. LaMelo is just one of those guys that it's, in my opinion, it's just going to be a hit or miss pick. And I know that some executives feel that way too. There's a lot of talent there, but pulling the trigger, there are some risks. And, you know, there's always, people are always going to evaluate the LeVar Ball factor after Lonzo came into the league and how he fared so far. But LaMelo has done everything he can to show that he is his own man and kind of distance himself in a way from LeVar and publicly saying that he would go to any team. Certainly he'd like the biggest stage possible, ideally. But time will tell if that'll happen. When you look at LaMelo, do you project him as an all-star? What do you see for his career when you try to look into your crystal globe?
Yeah, he's definitely a potential all-star. You know, if I were a betting man, though, I would say he's not. Just fully frank, there's a lot of great point guards in this league. And I think, you know, you look at all the years of Damian Lillard not making the all-star team, and he's one of the best players on the planet. I think it's hard to be an all-star point guard, an all-star backcourt player in the NBA. And I think, you know, that's not necessarily going to be what defines him. I think that he can have a really good career without necessarily making an all-star team. I could see him making, you know, one or two. I don't think he'll be a generational all-star, though. You know, those guys who you see year after year after year, because I don't really buy his shooting yet. I think that maybe his shooting comes around, but, you know, where it's at right now and the way his form looks and his shot selection, I don't think he's got the full package to be an all-star, and he certainly doesn't have the defensive intensity either. And I think that, you know, that's okay. And I think there are going to be guys in this class who are going to be all-stars, and potentially some who might even be, you know, consummate all-stars. But the reason why I have LaMelo above those guys is because, you know, with his size and his playmaking, it's closer to a sure thing for me than, you know, with the uniqueness factor. So that's kind of where I am with that is I don't necessarily project him as, you know, more than a two-time All-Star, but I think that he would still be somebody who I qualify as a top pick regardless of that reasoning.
Coming into this draft, when you say about a guy not being a kind of a multi All-Star, I see what you mean. I didn't, when I looked at this draft, I didn't really know if I saw a franchise caliber guy, but there are certainly players who can improve teams and help take them to that next level. One of those guys, in transitioning from LaMelo, is a guy that I think is one of the better players in this draft class and one of the top guys, James Wiseman. Personally, I would love to see him with Golden State. I think he'd be a great fit there and give them a dimension that I don't really think they've had. with his upside at that center position. I know they do like to play small ball, the Hamptons five, but, you know, Wiseman to the Warriors for me makes sense. I know you had touched upon it recently on the Rookie Wire that maybe you could see Golden State making a trade. I agree with you. they are Golden State is a team in win now mode. And from my vantage point, you can either take Wiseman and fill a need at center, or you move that pick and get veteran help for next season. What are your thoughts when you looked at the Warriors at that two spot as you were getting ready to do the mock?
Yeah, ultimately, I think James Wiseman does go at number two overall, but I don't think he goes at two to the Warriors. I don't think he fits their system. I think that the things that the Warriors have relied on for success over the last, you know, several years during their reign of power has been playmaking and shooting. And he's not really known for either of those things. He's not a particularly, frequent passer. He's not a particularly, good shooter. I mean, you don't see him step out beyond the arc very often at all. During AAU, I mean, he barely shot above 25% during, his multiple years on the AAU circuit. And, we didn't get a chance to see if he was able to improve on that during his time at Memphis. But he's not exactly, known as a shooter. And then, he's rarely on the AAU circuit ever averaged more than an assist a game either. So the reason why I don't think we see guys like Wiseman in the Warrior system is because it's not the way that they run their team. You see a lot of passing, you see a lot of 3-point shooting. But you've got guys like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, and honestly, even Andrew Wiggins, who are so high usage. You want to complement that with somebody who's more of a low usage guy. And I think that that's where I think Tyrese Haliburton steps in. As Tyrese Haliburton has a phenomenal assist rate without needing the ball in his hands very often. You can play him off ball and he can still make a difference. He's a long, lengthy guard in the backcourt. You can play him at the two, moving Clay up to the three, and have a secondary playmaker in the backcourt. And I think when you have a shooter like Steph, having someone like Tyrese Haliburton to set Steph up and set up Clay Thompson can really go a long way. And I think Wiseman doesn't really do much to actually make Steph or Clay better. I think on the defensive end, it might be helpful to have someone like James Wiseman. He could be a 2-block-per-game kind of guy, I think, in the NBA, as soon as next season, potentially even. But I think, you're really limiting someone's offensive potential when the ball is going through, Steph and Clay and, even Wiggins and Draymond as well. I mean, there's so many options to score that I think you're going to kind of lower James Wiseman's ceiling by bringing him into Golden State. And I think, Wiseman, it's no knock on him either. I think that the reason why I have him at number 8 to the Knicks is he's a phenomenal defensive player, massive body, massive wingspan. And I think that, the Knicks could trade up for someone like that to pair with Tom Thibodeau, who's a defensive-minded coach. I think over the years, we've seen Tom Thibodeau get the most defensive tenacity out of guys like Wiseman, and I think that's just a pairing that's destined for success if you do make that happen. But I don't think the Warriors could really use somebody like Wiseman. I think having a low-usage guy at the center or a small ball five who could at least shoot are the two ways that you're going to get the most effective version of the Golden State starting lineup or closing lineup. So I don't think that it makes sense to put him in Golden State at the end of the day. That being said, they've always drafted the best player available. That's how Steph Curry got there to begin with. They had, Monta Ellis at the position, and Steph Curry was the best player available. So if they do end up drafting James Wiseman, I don't think anyone's eating crow on that, because I think that their draft philosophy has always been to draft the best player available. And I think that it is very reasonable to make the argument that James Wiseman is going to be the best player available at that point. So I wouldn't hate the pick for them at all. It's just not what my gut tells me is the likely pick for them either.
You touched on Wiseman, but the pros and cons of drafting him if the Warriors keep the pick at two. Some executives have kind of echoed the point you made about defensively, how he could help them. But time will tell what they do. I certainly think they're going to be active with that pick. And then some other guys you look at in this draft class, Anthony Edwards, the Ant-Man. I'm curious to see what type of player he ends up becoming. People throw out all these different comparisons. Some, could say as high as like a Dwayne Wade, as low as a Deion Waiters. That's such a broad spectrum that you see out there. When you look at the Ant-Man, what do you foresee for him for his career and where he can go in the draft class.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a reason why both those two names are brought up, right? Is they're both really good athletes. But you know, it kind of depends on how you evaluate his brain and his head and his mentality. And I think the reason why Deion Waiters, you know, didn't become, you know, the all-star that Dwayne Wade was, is because, you know, I think a lot of it was shoulders up for Deion Waiters. And I think, you know, there are some of those questions about Anthony Edwards that I've heard from, you know, scouts that I've chatted with. Realistically, I don't necessarily know the guy well enough to make an assertion one way or the other. I think that's going to come down to what the teams think in the interviews with him and how he proves himself during this pre-draft process. The reason why I'm a little bit lower on Anthony Edwards than I think a lot of other people are is because I think he's such a high usage player, and we haven't really seen him play off the ball very much. So if you want to have him be most effective, you're going to want the ball to go through his hands the entire time. So you can't really put him on a team like Minnesota, in my opinion, where they already have guys who require the ball a ton, like D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns, or Golden State, where they have, you know, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Andrew Wiggins, because I think the offense typically revolves around Anthony Edwards when he's on there. He's got that star potential because of that. So I have him with Charlotte right now, which I think is interesting because, you know, you could kind of have Charlotte hand him the keys to the car, you know, in one way of explaining it, right? Where I think, you know, you could kind of have him, you know, go with the highs of Charlotte, go with the lows of Charlotte, with Anthony Edwards potentially being the franchise alpha there. I think that the idea of him being a role player, at least in the beginning, kind of limits what he actually could do, because I don't think he's ever been a role player before, and I'm not really sure what his role would look like as a role player. I think he's always been the guy that, you know, Tom Crean did it, and I think other you know, every other version of that we've seen of Anthony Edwards has always been, you know, the Anthony Edwards show. You know, I think his shooting has been not fantastic. So I think the idea of labeling him a 3-and-D guy is a little bit inaccurate. I think he's closer to a slasher. He's always been really good within 5 feet, though. You know, I think that there are guys in this league who have made roles as slashers, but until he improves his jump shot to be like, you know, a 35 or higher percent shooter to consistently in the NBA, I think there are going to be questions about how high his ceiling can actually be, because the idea of, you know, a non-shooting really, you know, wing, I think does not necessarily scream all-star unless he's completely dominant. And I'm not sure if his body type is going to be the type of player that's going to be dominant in the NBA in the same way that someone like Giannis or Zion Williamson is.
I think it'd be interesting to pair him with Devontae Graham in the backcourt. I thought Devontae was certainly one of the most improved players of the year, and personally, I thought he should have been higher on other people's ballots. But that's a topic for another day. One topic that I do want to bring up today is a guy you recently wrote about, Onyeka Okongwu. Some people have labeled him as the next Bam Adebayo. Which is funny because Bam Adebayo was the next Dwight Howard. And look how far Bam has progressed within a couple of years. When you look at Okongwu, what do you see for him? And do you agree with the comparisons of Bam Adebayo?
So I love Onyeka and I love Bam Adebayo. I actually don't see the comparisons all that much, because I think what makes Bam elite is his playmaking, and that's not something that Onyeka has. When Bam was coming out of college, John Calipari had him working out as a guard for certain NBA teams, not to actually be a guard of the NBA, but to show NBA teams that he has guard skills. Onyeka doesn't have guard skills. That's not part of his game. That being said, I do think that Onyeka is going to be a consummate professional for 10, 15 years in this league. And I think that's kind of exactly what you want in this draft, right? Is if you can get somebody who you know is going to contribute and be a very good player for years to come, you got to take that guy. And I think Onyeka is definitely one of those guys. I think that he I think will remind more people of like Nene or Fareed or Montrezl Harrell than they will Bam Adebayo, because I think Bam Adebayo's playmaking brings him to the next level. Montrezl Harrell, Nene, Fareed, those kind of guys, you know, really great energy guys in the front court, dudes who are going to be scrappy, tenacious, fight for the ball, get defensive rebounds, get blocks, you know, not make dumb plays on offense, you know, finish highly at the rim, you know, shoot like 80% maybe in the NBA, but not necessarily have the team revolve around you. I think with Bam, you could have the offense run through him a little bit more because he can facilitate for others. Onyeka would love to do that. I talked to him specifically about that, and he says that he talks, you know, to his trainer all the time about ways he can add his playmaking skills to his arsenal. But that's not his game right now. And until it is, I mean, he's not Bam Adebayo. He's Onyeka. And I think that, you know, I don't necessarily see franchise alpha in Onyeka either. I think he's closer to somebody who's, you know, going to be a great locker room guy who people are going to love for years to come, but I don't think you're ever building your team around him. And I think that, you know, in high school, it was a little easier to do that because, you know, he was going against smaller guys, but in the NBA, you know, when he's going to be slightly undersized, that's just not going to work.
No, I agree with you. And we've seen big men carve out careers for themselves, whether it's his rebounders and whatnot. Look at a guy, not comparing him to this player, but look at a guy like a Tristan Thompson, a guy that found a role and a niche in the NBA as a big guy, a rebounder, attacking the glass offensively. I think Onyeka could do certain things like that as he bulks up his frame. He's still a young guy. And
I think that's a fair comparison too. And I think that, you know, Tristan Thompson's an NBA champion, man. I think Onyeka could win championships too.
Yeah. And I mean, you spoke with him. There's a lot to, a player's mentality and whatnot, in terms of prioritizing certain things. You know, you touched on a guy like Anthony Edwards, who being a high usage guy in the league, what worked for a lot of players in high school and college isn't going to necessarily translate in the league. And, you know, one of the things I had touched on in a recent long form piece for Hoopsype about players giving interview answers with executives. A lot of these players, I can't say in this draft class, but over the years, there have been plenty of players who have a warped sense of reality and who they could be. You know, some of them have told executives, as you know, I wrote on Hoopsype, that they think they're the next Anthony Davis or Kevin Durant. And these executives are asking them, well, what can you do right now? And there is no way that a rookie can come in and have that big of an impact yet. I think you hit the nail on the head with this draft class. You're looking for guys that could be really good players and starters for, you know, whether it's 5, 10 years, whatever have you. And that's valuable in the NBA. Just because a guy isn't a franchise all-star doesn't mean that you miss on a pick. There's still value in that. And, you know, you touched on Onyeka. Another guy that you spoke to that you said was one of your sleepers. And I would tend to agree, because coming out of high school, this kid was a top 3 to 5, I want to say, recruit. Isaiah Stewart, the Washington big man from Rochester, New York. Isaiah, and for those who may not have seen it yet, I suggest you take a look at this interview Brian did with Isaiah Stewart on Hoopsype. Isaiah Stewart has big time game. He's also a big time quote machine who is very confident in his ability as a player and coming into the league. So, Brian, with that in mind, after the conversation that you had with Isaiah, what did you come away from regarding Isaiah and just his confidence level and the future for him?
Isaiah Stewart is the kind of guy who, after talking to him, will move up like 20 spots on your big board. It's so hard not to believe in him. I think that a losing season at Washington really, really hurt his draft stock. Obviously, finishing last in the Pac-12 did him no favors. That being said, Isaiah Stewart didn't have a bad season. He was very productive as a scorer, rebounder, and rim protector. I think my biggest question mark about him was that, like, you know, half of his possessions finish as post-ups. he made it very clear that that's not going to be his game at the next level. It's going to be more of a pick and roll game. He's not going to be able to post up the same way he did in college. And I think that's fairly obvious because that's not what the NBA does, especially for guys who are 6'9". That being said, this guy won, Mr. Gatorade USA. This is, somebody who was just last year considered to be the best player in the country. And, the teams that target guys like that in the past, the one team that comes to mind is the Boston Celtics, guys who were really highly regarded coming out of high school and maybe slipped a little bit, but, still are all world talent. And I think Isaiah Stewart is exactly that. Isaiah Stewart is so dominant. And really, his confidence is the kind of thing where I just felt like I couldn't imagine a scenario where he didn't come out, if we had Summer League, and just start killing people out there. I mean, he is so angry to see guys that he's beaten his whole life ranked ahead of him that he wants to prove people wrong. And I think you're going to see a fire in Isaiah Stewart that you're not going to see in any other prospect in this class. I think in that sense, he's 100th percentile in terms of just his want. He's got that dog mentality, that ferocity, that fire. And I think that, those are the kind of things that, you saw in Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan that really pushed them to be elite, right? And I think that Isaiah Stewart really has that. As to what his game is going to be in the NBA, I don't know yet. I think we all have questions, about a 6'9" big man who's not necessarily a shooter. But he said that Washington limited him as a shooter. I think that he feels he's a much better and much more willing shooter than he was when he was with the Huskies. The 2-3 zone and the defensive scheme that Washington had also limited him because he didn't get to guard guys man-to-man. But the part that really stood out to me was just that he said that the fact that there aren't really group workouts this year, saved a lot of people some embarrassment because he felt that he would have gone out and either destroyed every big man he faced during group workout environments, the 5-on-5s that you see teams run every so often, when they're doing a typical pre-draft process, but also guys that would potentially just completely duck him because their agents didn't want them to have to face him. That was a really interesting quote and really insightful. And something that he said has been happening to him all his life is guys don't want to play him because they know he's going to give them hell. And I loved that. I loved that confidence. I loved that outlook. I loved the idea of him, feeling that he is to be feared. And I think that's what is going to have an NBA team, be interested in drafting him. That's at least why I would.
I think Isaiah, you talked about the chip on the shoulder. For me, it reminded me a little bit of Draymond Green and guys like that that take note of every team that passed on him. Isaiah, it's interesting. You mentioned on Washington's record, for a lot of these kids going into college, picking the right program is hard because you want to find a balance of going to a school that's going to allow you to play your game and showcase that to the NBA, but also you want to be a part of a winning program. If you think back even to guys like Karl Towns at Kentucky, Karl Towns barely was allowed to shoot three-pointers. He was for that team, he was a post-up guy. You look at Bam Adebayo, Tyler Herro had a different role. Devin Booker had a different role. And for a lot of these executives, the real homework is done going to practices and seeing guys play and getting that intel on what they can really do. But going back to Isaiah, you touched on him as one of your sleepers. For me, some guys I look at in this draft, one point guard I'd give you, or one guard rather, is a guy that Danilo Gallinari recently touched on in the last Hoops Eye podcast episode, a paisan, a fellow countryman, Nico Mannion.
Sopranos fan himself.
Nico, I got to tell you, Nico Mannion is a guy who's had some impressive games and practices with the Italian national team. I think that kid is a little bit slept on. Unless you're a guy that has followed maybe highlight reels of him in high school, I don't know if you got to see the full arsenal, but I think this kid has a chance in the league, and I'm personally looking forward to seeing what he can do. Certainly, the better he does, the better it would be for Italian basketball overall and the growth there in that regard. I'll give you a second round guy I could see as a sleeper, and then I was curious if you had any others when you think of some guys. But for me, Yoeli Childs is a guy that I've heard has interviewed well. Anytime you're looking at a guy that's an upperclassman, that tends to be the case. But a guy that could come to a team and maybe on the back end help them try to win, or if he finds the right team, to be a contributor right away. You see that a lot with some of the upperclassmen. I think those guys are always, in a way, they're almost diamonds in the rough, because a lot of guys are looking for upside in a draft and taking younger guys. So that is one guy I would take a look at in the second round. I think you had him 40th overall in your mock, somewhere along that range. When you look at the second round, who are some sleepers that you foresee going into this draft class?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to touch on the two guys you mentioned first, and then I'll give you my answers.
Sure.
When you talk about Nico Mannion, I agree with you. I mean, I think he is being slept on at this point. Nico had the second best assist percentage among all high major freshmen last year. That goes a long way. I mean, he is somebody who struggled, I think, in college, but he's still a really great playmaker, probably one of the best playmakers in this class. And I think that that's something that, the rest you could build on, but court vision, it's hard to teach. And he certainly has that. Yoeli's somebody that I interviewed last year, heading into the draft process, because he tested the waters last year. Interviewed him again this year, and he blew me away, man. I mean, he's somebody who I don't see very often in mock drafts, who deserves to be there. He's somebody who is going to come into the room and impress you and make you feel confident that he's going to make you look smart one day, because at the very least, he's going to be in your rotation and a professional and not make you look bad. I mean, he's a married man. He's got maturity for days, and he was productive too, man. I mean, he had 22.2 points a game and 9 rebounds per game last year, and he shot 48.9% on 3-pointers. I mean, he's not putting the ball on the floor and shooting threes, off the dribble, but he's, on a pick and pop. He was one of the most efficient guys in the country last year, and pick and pop, as we know, is a big part of the NBA game. So I definitely want to echo your sentiments about Yoeli all day long. I think the guy that people are sleeping on a ton is Cassius Sanley. Cassius came in to Duke as a freshman and immediately broke Zion Williamson's record for the highest vertical leap in program history. He won back-to-back California high school state championships at Sierra Canyon, which is now where Bronny James goes to school, and obviously a ton of talent, BJ Boston, Zaire Wade, and Zaire Williams. Both these guys, Marvin Bagley went to Sierra Canyon. It's a pipeline to the NBA. And I think that, Cassius Sanley, I think, is going to set the record for maybe the best vertical leap in NBA history when he does his combine testing this week. He got all ACC ACC all freshman honors, put up 13 points a game. But he shot 30% on threes in the corner, 44% on threes off the catch. And I think that he was sort of limited in Duke's program a little bit. In a transition offense, dudes who can run and can fly like Cassius Sanley are going to be at a premium. And there's a lot of teams that still value athleticism. The team that I have him going to is the Oklahoma City Thunder, who found a similar player, I think, in Russell Westbrook coming out of high school or coming out of college, where, athleticism was his main thing, and they turned him into a MVP, really. Hamidi Diallo, another vertical guy who, won Slam Dunk Champion recently. I think Oklahoma City valued that. And I think that Cassius Sanley is in that mold. And, he's a young guy, but he's got a winning pedigree. And he's something that I think a lot of teams are gonna like. And I don't see him very high on mock drafts, and I don't really know why. And I think, in that mold, too, another guy who comes to mind is Devon Dotson out of Kansas. Kansas was the best defensive team in the country. Dotson played a huge role in that. I think that he is somebody who has really transformed himself into a really, really impressive young defender and somebody who I think is going to surprise a ton of people with his speed during that testing comes out during the combine too. I think that, you know, his agility, his ability in the open court, his insight as a playmaker and floor general, and his general athleticism are going to make him a candidate for potential top consideration as well in terms of just being high-end talent in this class. I think there's a ton of guys who I'm happy to talk about who are potential, you know, second-round sleepers who can have, you know, a long career in the NBA potentially. I mean, I think Xavier Tillman fits that mold really well, too. But in terms of guys who I think are potential all-stars right now, you know, at least at some point in their career, who aren't really being considered in the lottery, I think Cassius Stanley should be brought up in that regard. I think there's a lot of Zach LaVine in him. And I think Devon Dotson as well. I mean, he's got that two-way potential, man. I mean, he's got, you know, elite offensive skills and elite defensive mentality and productivity. And he's still young, too. And I'm not sure why when we make lotteries, we don't talk about either of these guys. I mean, Dotson especially, I think, showed he was just as productive as any player in the country last year.
Well, moving on now from sleepers to teams that could make some trades. Because at the end of the day, one thing we know for certain is going down at the draft. There's going to be movement. You know, I'm getting the sense that now free agency is going to be sooner. I'm getting the sense that free agency is going to be closer to the draft than people maybe assumed. And I think that that's going to cause a lot more trade talks to go through, ultimately, as teams try to free up some cap space for free agency and some other moves. When I look at teams going into this draft class that can make moves, you know, we touched on it earlier. The first team that came to mind, especially at the top of the draft, was Golden State, team in a win-now mode. Like I said, you can either take Weissman. I know you touched on some guards that they could potentially look at. For me, it was filling a need at center because you get a guy cheap there, relatively. But if you don't do that, I think they do. Everybody that I've talked to executive-wise around the league thinks that they're going to look for veteran help for next season to try to reload with Steph Curry coming back, Klay Thompson coming back, Draymond Green back in the fold, and to try to make a run in the West. When I also look at teams that can make a draft at the top of at the board, I know we touched on LaMelo as a fit to Minnesota, but you know, they have the 1, the 17, and the 33 picks in the draft. They've got some nice chips to play there where they can make some moves as well and get maybe another guy that could be a win-now player to help D'Angelo Russell and Karl Towns get back to the playoffs. And they're going to have some other big decisions to make this summer with other young core guys and Hernan Gomez and Malik Beasley, who's going to be one of the top free agents on the market as currently a restricted free agent going into this summer. By the way, you can check out those rankings on hoopshype.com or top free agents for 2020. But those are two teams high up that I look at. You touched on the Knicks as well. Having 8 and the 27 pick in the first round, maybe they try to move up and dangle a younger piece. You touched on a guy like James Weissman you think that they could look at. It's going to be interesting to see. And the other team I look at high up in the top 10, the Hawks. At a certain point, they've got a lot of young talent as it is. You know, you've got Cam Reddish, Herder, DeAndre Hunter. You've got Trae Young. At a certain point, you got to get some veteran guys in there to help that team get to the next level. My sense is that the Hawks want to try to get somewhere in the 30s in terms of wins next year and improve in free agency. I look for them certainly to be a team that's in the mix for shooting guys like Davis Bertans and Joe Harris. When you look at that top 10 echelon of the draft, what do you see in terms of trade movement potentially?
Like in terms of guys who you want to move up to get, or what?
In terms of, do you agree with me on some of those teams that you think could make those moves, or do you see anybody else that I'm missing? Maybe.
Yeah, those would be the exact teams that I would probably highlight as well. I think, you know, to a man, I think you got it exactly right. I think, you know, you might see teams try to trade out or trade up. I think, you know, Philadelphia, Boston, and New Orleans all come to mind in that sense, because they all have a surplus of draft picks. You know, those are the three teams that I kind of highlight as I don't see them using all these picks. I mean, no scout that I've talked to expects Boston to roster more than one rookie next season, really. And they've got several draft picks. So I think that means they're either drafting, you know, a few European players, or they're packaging and they're trading, or trading out, you know, trading up, trading down, whatever it might be. I don't really see Boston using all those picks. 'Cause I mean, where do you put those guys in the roster, man? You know, you only have so much room. I think you could say a similar thing with Philly. Philly has so many picks in this draft, and there's just no way that Philly is going to be able to roster all those guys next year. So I think, you know, from a logical standpoint, with Joseph, it comes to surplus of draft picks. You know, New Orleans has a ton of draft picks over the next few years. You know, they've done some draft and stash guys in the past. I could see them doing draft and stash this year, or trading. You know, they drafted Didi Lazada last year. I could see them doing like a similar thing this year, with, you know, some of the European guys that come to mind. I mean, there's a couple of guys, you know, playing in EuroLeague right now who I definitely like, who have played really well. And I think, you know, that are going to capture some attention. And, you know, there are teams that are near the cap, who, you know, who knows how much they're going to want to spend, right? I think, you know, Brooklyn's one of those teams. Mm-hmm. San Antonio's one of those teams. Guys who they just don't want to pay a rookie. They'd rather pay that money to somebody who they know they can get.
I agree with you on some of the teams you mentioned. Certainly Boston, 14, 26, 30. Whether it's draft and stash or trying to even package all those guys and move up and maybe take one guy in the top 10, I could see them doing. Ainge has hit on guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So maybe why not try to add one of those other guys? And as you look towards the future, Gordon Hayward has a player option this summer. You know, if he opts in, which is expected, he's only going to have another year on his deal. And maybe you try to find another wing player to groom. I know they have Romeo Langford already, but certainly you can, and it never hurts to have a surplus of top 10 talent if they can move up. I think you touched on Philly too. They have 4 second round picks. Very Sam Hinkie-esque to have that many second round picks, but certainly see them trying to move some of those guys and those picks as well. And I think you also touched on the Pelicans as well. They have 4 picks too. Sacramento also has 4. Those are teams that I certainly look at as teams that could move the needle and try to make a bunch of trades, whether some will be less exciting. Some could be for cash and just to get off the pick, or to take a guy overseas that's a draft and stash, or a guy that we've never heard of. And I always get a kick out of guys trying to pronounce their name. But Brian, it's been fun breaking down these draft topics with you. And, you know, it's only going to ramp up from here. For those listening, you can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Kalbroski. Thanks for tuning in, as always, everybody. And remember, if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High podcast, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.